There we go. Okay. My name is Sharon Hollinsby. I'm a graduate student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and I'm here to interview Kes Woodward, well-known Alaskan artist, about several subjects. We'll see where we go with it. This interview, the recording will go to the Oral History Department of the Arctic and Polar Regions Library. As well as a copy will go to the university's Museum of the North. Now, this is our first and probably only interview, but we have had several emails in the last few days talking about process in making art. And some of what gets into this is also technique and possibly concern about outcomes. So at this point, well, we agreed that we'd have a conversation and see where it went, but I'd like to start now with turning this over to Kes for any thoughts that he has had since we began emailing about this. Okay.
Well, I've been excited to talk to you about how I work and what I try to do in my work and how sometimes it works better than others. And I'll just let you lead us through it. I'm not sure exactly what you're interested in. I can talk about process, I can talk about technique, I can talk about overarching ambitions, and I can talk about my personal history and how I've started painting and how it's changed over the years, all of those things. But I will just, it's easier for me so that I just don't go rambling off into the stratosphere. If you ask specific questions, and then I can kind of follow up from there.
Okay, I can do that. My idea when I thought about doing this with you was that I may have told you, I was in the Wall Street Art Gallery recently when your painting for KUAC was on the wall, and I walked in, it was after we'd had that opening to do with that. And it was a couple of people in there, obviously tourists, talking about your painting, and the man was saying, "Well, I know how he did that. He used a projector. He projected this image of a landscape up on the wall, and then he just painted, colored in the areas." And I have to say, no, that's not how he works. And so I repeated what I had heard you say, which was you might use some of the compositional elements of what you're looking at, but you would paint what you felt as you saw it. Okay, and that was got me thinking about process.
Yeah, I was very bemused by your description of that conversation, and I'm bewildered actually. I don't see how anybody could look at that image, which is not at all photographic. It's very stylized and abstracted, and both the shapes of the forms and the colors of the forms and everything else is very different from anything photographic. I do take photographs. I don't carry a camera at all anymore. The only thing I use a camera for is to take high-resolution photographs of my finished work. But I always have my iPhone in my pocket, and so I take a lot of snapshots. But what I'm always after in my work is to try to capture not so much what a place looks like as how it felt to me to be in a place at a particular time of day and a particular time of year, a particular quality of light. And that, in order to do that, I need to really focus on being in the place when I'm there. So I very seldom make sketches from life. Sketching is slow, especially for me, and it's much better for me to to just focus on what I'm feeling and what I'm seeing, and try to focus on being in the place, and then come back to my studio and work on whatever I'm working on. And maybe I took a few snapshots of the area, maybe I didn't. And then, much later, typically, often months later, sometimes even years later, I'll come to my studio as I do every morning, and I'll think, oh, now that experience of being in that place at that particular time has had a chance to settle into a place deep enough in my consciousness that I have something personal to say about it, something more personal than what I would say if I were responding to it immediately, which is, isn't this beautiful? I mean, that's not very interesting to me. And so it takes a long time for that to kind of work its way down into my consciousness to where I have something not necessarily earth-shaking or important, but at least personal to say about how it felt to be in that place. And so I'll start to work on the painting. And I typically do, particularly for more complicated images of scenes, and especially for scenes with widely known landmarks, like well-known mountains and things mm-hmm. like that, I do refer to photographs because I want to get the shape of things right. But there's never a photograph that, there's never an individual photograph that looks like any of my paintings. And the paintings, as you know from having seen them over the years, are somewhat realistic from a distance, very realistic from a distance, but they are very, very abstract up close. And so I spend all day going up and working on the painting and till I get lost, because it all just looks like paint when mm-hmm. I'm up there, and then making myself stop and walk back and get it all clear in my mind again, where I am and what I'm trying to do. And I walk back up and I paint until I get lost again. And so I'm, over the course of the day, you can tell I'm sort of wearing a path in the linoleum on the floor here as I walk back and forth and back and forth.
So is this a way of painting that you started fairly early in your career as an artist?
I think it has elements of the way I started because I painted for years when I first started painting completely abstractly without any representational content.
Was this when you were in college?
In college. I didn't grow up painting. I never had any interest in art. I was purely a very serious math and science person, and I did original research in a National Science Foundation group between my junior and senior years of high school at Florida State University. I just, you know, I was completely focused on being a scientist. And I went off to college and fell in love with an art major and took a painting class just to be with her, and came under not only her spell, but the spell of a very ambitious and inspiring undergraduate painting teacher who convinced me mostly by example that this is something a ambitious, bright young person might want to do with his life. And so I started painting, and my wife-to-be, as it turned out, took me to my first art museum in my sophomore year of college. I'd never been to an art museum in my life, and I was just blown away. And under the influence of my undergraduate painting professor, I became very interested in current contemporary art of the time, which was color field abstraction. And so I started out for years making abstract paintings, completely non-representational paintings. And it wasn't really until I came to Alaska that my work took on more and more realistic, more and more representational aspects. But what has been consistent over the years is that I want the painting, particularly when you're up close to it, to still be a color field abstraction. When people who don't know my work at all ask me what I paint, I tell them that I paint big abstract paintings that happen to look like birch trees. And that's exactly uh-huh. what I try to do. I always want to have it both ways.
Well, one of the things I'm curious about then too is in your process of making, coming to turning points, I guess. Now, I'm kind of aware of one, I believe, at turning point was when you decided to retire as a faculty member from university. I was in a class you were teaching, and you said something during that class that this was the class that caused you to begin to think about retiring or triggered it or something, that this was the time. You said that more than once.
Yeah.
At any rate, that's my memory. So that was a turning point. Whenever you did decide, I know it took another couple of years before you really retired. But that would have been a turning point for you.
Yeah, it was a turning point for me to quit teaching and to just spend my time fully in the studio. Although when I taught, the whole time I taught, the 20 years that I taught at the university, I worked steadily in my studio as well. In fact, I arranged my schedule in such a way that I could have two very long, hard, intense days of classes starting at 8 o'clock in the morning and going back to back on Tuesdays and Thursdays until the end of the day. And I would still have part of a day for office hours, but have a considerable amount of time in my studio. And so I exhibited almost as widely when I was teaching as I did after I retired. The difference is that I still, at the time I retired, I still loved teaching. I was not in any way burned out or tired of it. I just wanted to see what I could do if I was able to go to my studio and focus all my energies there and paint all day, every day.
Now, you still work like that. You said you do paint all day, every day. Do you ever, and this again is a kind of process question, do you ever find you don't want to do that sometimes? Or
As with a number of other things in my life, I try not to let that ever rise to the level of a question. I don't think when I get up in the morning, I wonder if I should go out and paint today.
Okay.
I assume that I'm going to go out mm-hmm. and paint, just as I assume I'm going to have breakfast. And so I do lots of other things. I do errands, and I'm the token artist on every board, commission, task force, fellowship panel in Alaska and the West. And so I'm there are a lot of days when I'm not in the studio. Mm-hmm. But all things being equal, I try to be out here by 9 o'clock in the morning and go to work. And there has never been a day when I didn't have things that I wanted to do in the way of painting, that more things that I wanted mm-hmm. to do than I had time to get to. So I'm always eager. Now, some days it goes better than others, and so there are a lot of days when I'm really discouraged,
mm-hmm.
but I never don't feel like working.
So the discouragement might be about a painting?
A painting, yeah. And
so what do you do, back away from it then, or do you work at it some
I
more?
Just keep
just
working.
Keep going?
I keep working at it until I either destroy it completely, get it to a point where I can't do anything more to it, which doesn't happen very often anymore. But or I just keep at it until I'm happy with it. One of the things that my undergraduate painting professor, my mentor and model, taught me was that you need to learn to look at your work and ask yourself the right questions about what's working and what's not working, and be able to think through what you need to do to make it better, that you have to be responsible for every square inch of the canvas. And You have to be responsible for making it as good as you can possibly make it, and you can never settle for having it just be okay. And that if you think of something else that you might do that might ruin it or might make it better, you have to do that. You can't not take that chance. And so, you know, because I didn't grow up making art or even thinking about art, I don't have a lot of natural facility. All of this comes very hard to me compared to many of the artists that I know.
Most when you say all this, what do you mean? All this comes hard.
My painting.
Everything.
Art doesn't come easy for me. Every piece is, to some extent, pitched battle. And nearly every piece reaches a point at some point where I think, oh, this is terrible. This is never going to work out. And often it reaches a point where I'm just kind of, I think, all right, I'm going to try one more thing before I give up on it. And then I'll usually either that'll work, or I'll try one more thing and one more thing and one more thing. And usually I'm able to get through that. And by the time I'm done with it, it's never, you know, I begin every painting. I'm an eternal optimist. I begin every painting thinking, this is going to be the best painting I've ever done. Mm. And after I finish every painting, I think, if I had that to do over again, I bet I could do it right. it never turns out the way I expect. It often turns out in surprisingly, to my mind, wonderful ways that I didn't expect. Things happen, and I paint myself into a corner, figuratively, and I have to sort of find a way out of it. And in the process of doing that, I come up with something that I wouldn't have thought that I was going to do when I started the painting.
So if you finish a painting at 11 a.m., what happens then? Do you start another one right then?
Usually if I finish a painting at 11 a.m., I have lunch, and then I photograph it. I set up lights and I photograph it, and then I frame it. I just yesterday had UPS delivered $6,000 worth of frame parts, and they're in the basement of the studio, and I get out the frame parts and put together the frame, and I put the frame on it. And then I take it off the wall, and I find a place for it in the rest of the space, which kind of functions as a gallery. And I get out a new canvas, and I put hooks on the back of it, and I put it on the wall, and I begin at least deliberating on what I'm gonna paint on that canvas.
You said that you have so many ideas of what you want to paint, what you want to get to. So when you come to the point where you actually have this new canvas on the wall, what happens in your mind then about what the next step or what you're going to do?
It really varies. A lot of times when I'm working on a painting, I will think, this is interesting, but I could also do this. And so I'll kind of have in mind something that's related to the painting that I'm doing. For instance, I this painting that I just finished has a relatively smooth, fleshy trunk, and I might, in the process of working on that, think I'd like to do an image in which there's more peeling trunk, and this is a very young trunk in this painting, and so I might be thinking it'd be interesting to do an older trunk. Trees sort of stand in for people in my work, and in their strength and their uprightness and their, but also in their vulnerability and their scars and the way they're what's happened to them in their lives, so in their skins, and so.
So is this a trunk you know that you're familiar with?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it started off as a trunk right outside the window here, but it doesn't really look like that tree
anymore.
It took on a life of its own, yeah. as they tend to do. Very occasionally, I'll do a painting that that I can point to the tree and say, this is a portrait of that tree, but it would be recognizable to somebody else. They're almost always recognizable to me, but most of them, I get so involved in the character of the paint itself that I take such large liberties with the form that they don't end up looking like the specific model that they were based on.
Well, how did you get so familiar with birch trees to know?
You know, I started painting birch trees in 1978 when I moved from Juneau to Anchorage. I was a curator at the Alaska State Museum, and I took a job as artistic director of the Visual Arts Center of Alaska. And our first apartment in Anchorage was Alaska Methodist University, then it's Alaska Pacific University campus, and it was in a birch grove, and I saw these birch trees in South Central Alaska, and my wife and I made trips up to Denali Park, and I saw birch trees when we in the front part of the park there that I just thought were some of the most beautiful things I'd ever seen. And I began essentially making portraits of them then in 1978. And since then I've painted lots and lots and lots of other things, a lot of water and a lot of sky and a lot of mountains. But it was also, it's also interesting to me at the time that the landscape painting in Alaska had almost nothing to do with the forest. It was almost all about mountains, historically and in terms of what was happening in contemporary art. And I have always been incredibly fond of being in the forest, being in the woods. And so even when I was in Juneau, in the years before, I tended to paint trees because I just find them fascinating, and I've always loved how individual they are and how much of their lives shows in the way they look. But birch trees also afford me something that very few other images do, and that is the easy ability to have both the kind of abstraction that I want and the representation that I want. Mm-hmm. You can take all sorts of crazy liberties with the form and the color of a birch tree, and it still looks like a birch tree. And that's not true of a lot of things. It's kind of the perfect image for me. It allows me to have that combination of abstraction and realism. And the other, and birch trees especially, as opposed to other trees, because they are more individual. They are more different from individual to individual in terms of their color and their form and their looks than any other tree species on Earth. In the same acre of land, there will be trees that are almost all dark to almost all light. There will be trees that are smooth-barked and trees that are scaly-barked. And they're all birch trees, and they're all growing in the same place. And so they're kind of like people, again, in that respect.
So when you came up here, I remember you started at the museum in Juneau in 1977,
right.
And so by 78, you were painting birch trees? Was there, okay, I have a little more to my question. Okay, maybe I'm wrong so far, but bear with me. So you began to transition from color field with no representation, into something which you were trying to represent. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, and so did that happen rather quickly, that this shift occurred?
The shift toward representation happened almost immediately when I came to Alaska. My graduate thesis exhibition, my MFA thesis exhibition, had some representation. A lot of the pieces were based on maps, which also have that combination of representation and abstraction. I had paintings of... I've always been interested in sort of the human will to find order in the midst of chaos. And so I had some big pieces in my MFA thesis exhibition in which I painted the night sky, and I charted it all out so that I had all the stars in the right place and stuff. But it was still very abstract because it's mostly a dark painting with little bits of light here and there, different, slightly different hues and different sizes. And what I did is I made a couple of the constellations that we all think of, Orion and Pegasus and things like that, onto the canvas. And then I made up new constellations because I got to thinking about how the sky is totally random. You know, there's not Orion up there. That's an order that we as humans have imposed on the sky. And that you could make up your own constellations perfectly well. And other cultures have made up their own constellations. And so I had in my thesis exhibition in 1975, I had rocks on the floor that I had picked up out in the mountains in Idaho and that had quartz dikes in them. And I had arranged into circles and squares by lining up the little quartz dikes. And I made pieces, I made prints and paintings that were based on images of that sort. So there was a fair amount of representation in those, but they're still very abstract kind of images.
Well, what was happening to color at that point? We've been doing a lot of, or thinking about anyway, color field stuff.
That's a very good point. I hadn't really thought about that. I had very little focus on color or quality of light in my paintings before I came to Alaska. And I think as much as my paintings are about paint and about birch trees, they're probably more about light than anything else. And I think what being in Alaska did was it made me focus more on the extraordinary light that we get here with the sun going around at a shallow angle and having hours of twilight all year round. And it just made me much more attuned to light. And so I found myself trying to capture some of that quality of light almost immediately when I came to Alaska. Even though in Juneau the quality of light's very different from here, it's still beautiful. It's much more muted, but it's very silvery, and I found it very attractive. And so I was capturing some of the light there. And then when I came to Anchorage, I was in Anchorage for just 1 year and then back to Juneau for 2 years as a higher level curator, and then came up here in 1981 to Fairbanks, and here the light just blew me away. And so the color really became much more a part of every painting.
Well, it seemed to me that within recent years, say the last 15 years at some point, that your paintings began to be suffused with rich color more than they had formerly. Is that right?
Yeah, I think for a couple of reasons. If I look at the birch trunks that I'm painting now and the ones that I first painted when I did birch portraits in 1984, 1985, They are much more colorful now. I think I just allow myself more freedom to observe and enhance the colors that are there. But some of that comes too from changing technique over the years. I, for many, many, many years, painted exclusively wet and wet. And
oils or
Both. I go back and forth between oils and acrylics.
Mm-hmm.
Each of them has, as you well know, its advantages and its disadvantages. Oils are much richer as they come out of the tube, much richer in color, and they blend more easily. But they also get muddy really easily, and you have to wait for them to dry to go on to the next stage. And acrylics are too bright when they come out of the tube, but you can keep doing things with them, and you can just paint more thickly, and you can still blend with them. You just have to do a different technique. So I end up doing a painting like this one is acrylic, and this painting is oil, and they end up looking very much alike.
So,
Well,
I mean, it's clearly the same artist.
Yeah.
Did that and that. Now, that's an acrylic?
This one is oil.
That's oil.
And this one is acrylic.
Okay.
And it's almost impossible to tell if you don't know.
What about this one?
Almost everything else here is acrylic right now because I've been painting in acrylics for a while now. I'll probably go back to oils sometime soon, but this is all acrylic.
Uh-huh.
But
except for that.
Except that one.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, are any others?
That's gorgeous.
Yeah. And then these big ones on paper are oil pastels. One of the biggest changes that happened in my work is that about 7 years ago, I for the first time started doing, instead of painting wet into wet, I started making paintings like these, in which I was using very thin, transparent layers of color, almost like watercolor. And sometimes I do that in oil, sometimes I do that in acrylic, sometimes there's medium in the paint, transparent medium, gloss medium, and sometimes there's not. I can't show you that on the paintings that are here right now because these are all pretty recent. But what it was interesting to me that I had never really painted that way. I'd always wanted to have kind of thicker, fleshier, more sensual kinds of paint. But what I was after when I started doing these paintings with layers of thin, transparent color was a greater kind of luminosity, having the light pass down through the paint to the white of the canvas and bounce back through. And there was a kind of luminosity that I could get with these transparent layers of color that are impossible to get when you're using thicker pigmented paint. And so I don't think I could have done that 25 years ago or 30 years ago because it's like watercolor. It's kind of a one-way process. Once you eliminate the white of the canvas, you can't get back to it.
Yeah.
And so I needed to develop my facility, develop my skills, and my confidence in the marks that I put down enough to give myself permission to work that way. And it was, I think, a surprise for a lot of people when I had my first show of paintings like that at Well Street 7 years ago to see all this. You know, I used both galleries at Well Street, filled the whole gallery with new paintings of the same kind of scenes I had painted before, but painted in a very different way. And that's part of the reason I think that I never get bored and I'm always yeah. eager to come out here is that I, as I said on my blog, just a few weeks ago when I put up my next to last blog post, I think most artists paint all kinds of different subjects, but they tend to paint all those subjects in the same way. And I'm sort of the opposite of that. I paint pretty much the same things over and over. I paint the forest and the mountains and the sky and the water. But over time, I paint them in very different ways. And you can see just a tremendous variety of paint, of ways of applying paint in these paintings that that I think is somewhat unusual. Even though the subjects are either basically forests or mountains.
Yeah. I need to sit down. I'm taking little notes from time to time about things I want to talk to you about after we finish.
Okay,
it's like I have so many thoughts in my head right now. I mean, I'm sort of full, like, with what you're talking about, because you're being very open about so much, that I'm a little at a loss. So I'm going to come back to our emails, which I printed out, so that I can refer here. Okay, you talked a bit about technique, and you at first didn't really want to get into that wholly. Do you feel like we're covering ground that's not technique-based, essentially?
Oh, yeah.
We're in the process pretty well.
Yeah.
Good. That's how it seems to be.
I don't mind talking about technique at all. It's, you know, particularly with another painter like you, it's fun to talk shop.
Yeah, right. One of the things I've told Sandra Heffner, and Sue Farnham, both of whom just have you in the highest regard as a teacher, that I was going to do this, and did they have any questions? Well, the one that stuck in my mind was that Sue said, well, it used to be said that he painted with this little tiny brush. Is that true, and is it still true?
It is absolutely, it is so true. my late wife used to just give me a really hard time about that. I would come in exhausted from a day's work, and I, you know, would have gotten this small area done, and she would say, "Why don't you just use a bigger brush?" But you know, I think there's no right or wrong way. There's no right or wrong technique, but you have to know yourself, and you have to adapt your techniques to your both your skills and your predilections. And basically, you can paint with a you can do many of the same things, almost all the same things, painting slowly with a large brush or quickly with a small brush. And I am impatient. When I'm painting, I want my hand to move quickly. And so the way that I maintain control is to use a small brush. So normally, no matter how big a painting, I'm using a brush like this. I'm using a size 1 or a size 0 brush. And it's really loaded with paint. And on my palette, I put out all the colors in the order of the spectrum, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, violet, and often some black, and almost always some white. And I never mix up an area of color, a big area of color, ahead of time and then apply it. What I'm always doing is I'm up there and I reach over, and if I want something that's violet, then I reach my brush into the blue and into the red, and I blend it maybe sometimes a little bit on the palette, but largely on the canvas. And what that does is it means every time I reach over there, I'm getting a little bit different combination of those colors. And if I want the violet to be a little less intense, I, you know, will touch my brush to the pile of yellow on my palette. And if I want it to be a little bit more to the red violet, then I put more, then I dip more heavily into the red and less heavily into the blue. But the point is that rather than mixing up a whole batch of purple, what I'm doing is I'm each time I'm reaching over, and this is really one of the biggest secrets to my work, and to the way I work, which is that I'm never just coloring in an area. I'm always grabbing different bits of color each time I go back to my palette. And so one of the things that's very, very, very important to me about paintings, my paintings in particular, but one of the things that I'm drawn to in other people's paintings as well, is that the painting needs to give you different things from different distances. From across the room, it needs to be bold enough and striking enough to make you want to walk up and look at it. But if you walk up and look at it and you don't see anything different than you saw from across the room, then consciously or unconsciously, that's very disappointing. And so this technique that I have developed is a way of making sure that there's not just, there's never just one continuous area of texture or color that's all the same. When you walk up close, what you see is a lot of variations that you can't see from across the room. And so in my mind, that's much more rewarding. It's more rewarding if the painting is giving you something different with every step you take as you approach it.
And if there's a revelation in that.
Yeah. So I'm using a tiny little brush like this, and it's fully loaded with paint, and I'm you know, moving rapidly with it as I go.
So do you use the same brush all the way through? Do you wipe it off once you want to start some, put some
yellow
on
it? Yeah, I slosh it around in my water, and I
what if you're using oil? What are you sloshing it in?
Into
mineral spirits, or
into a medium of some sort, different kinds of mediums.
Okay, I'd like to talk to you about that maybe later. I mean, so you don't switch a brush for each kind of thing you're getting?
No, I pretty much I occasionally will use two different brushes in the course of a painting, but normally I use one brush for the whole painting, and normally it's small, and normally by the end of a good sized painting, it's ruined and I have to get another one, because I'm moving quickly and I'm heavy-handed.
I'd like to go over and look at this. Is the most recent one, and just see this up close.
So you look at this, and it all looks like one color until you get up close, and then you see that there are oranges and yellows and pinks and more intense colors and less intense colors and slightly darker colors and slightly lighter colors. And I tend to put down marks of this sort and then bring in the, I define the forms by bringing in the area around it as much as, I very seldom put a finished form on top of another form.
Yeah.
I put down a form and then I...
You shape it.
And I shape it from the outside.
Yeah.
And what I like is dragging some of that paint out into the surrounding paint and having it just do different things in different places.
Now this looks like, at first glance, this looks black, okay? But I gather when you bring it out, it's not black because you're pulling out
green.
Right,
because you can see how green it is when it gets this lighter color around it.
Yeah. Now this is very vivid here. All these compared to this, it looks.
Yeah. Well, this is a new young branch, and
so full of life.
It's going to be a brighter color than the older.
Is this acrylic?
This is acrylic. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, I like this look here. I can see what you've done with your brush.
Yeah, and see, that's a small brush, but it's just full of paint, and it's just like...
Yeah, right. Huh. Okay, it's great. Good. This is very vivid. I mean, of course, we can look at it, too, since it's on the wall.
It's hard, you know, it's easy to point it out.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of that comes through in just an audio-only interview.
Yeah. Well, somebody can go and look at your paintings, yeah. And so they can always see from that.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. I mean, that would be the ideal thing, is if somebody ever listens to this, they'll think about it the next time they look at one of my paintings, and I'll say, oh, so that's how it goes.
If I encounter that man and his wife again on Wall Street, I'll say a few more things.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see here if there's anything else. Is there anything that we haven't talked about yet that seems like you'd like to add or like to elaborate on?
Oh, gosh. Probably there are lots of things, but...
Yeah, nothing right now.
Nothing that jumps out to me.
I don't think I have right now any more questions. This has been very illuminating for me, just listening to you talk about it. I don't know, have you, you know, I was concerned you've had so many interviews and you're so publicized, whether we're covering old ground that you have covered before, or can you even remember whether you've covered it before?
It's all new to me.
Every morning?
People come to the studio a lot, particularly collectors of my work, and you know, they'll ask me questions. They'll ask some of these same questions. And a lot of what I say, I've said before. But, you know, when I'm talking to you, I know I'm talking to another painter. And so it's much easier to talk about these things because you know what it's like to dip over into that palette and put it onto canvas. And, it's never, you know, it's not... It doesn't get boring to me to talk about art, my art or anybody else's art.
And what do you think about or imagine in the future for you? Do you feel like you're kind of on a trek or a path or a journey or something?
You know,
like that?
All I know is I'm gonna, as long as I can do it, physically do it, mentally do it, I'm gonna just come out to the studio and work. It's given how obsessive compulsive I am and wanting to control everything. I mean, you see all my paints so lined up over there so neatly, and that's not for your benefit. That's the way it is all the time. And they're all lined up in the order of the spectrum, so I know exactly where to go to reach for the one that I want. Given that kind of tidiness and obsessive compulsiveness, it is... continuing to mystery to me how little control I have over what I paint. You know, all I can do is show up and start working, and I can only paint what I feel like working on. There's
that's important.
There's that's one of the reasons I hate commissions. Is that even though I only do commissions of things for paintings that are subjects and ways of working that I would normally do otherwise, it's very hard for me to paint a painting of a mountain when I am feeling like painting a forest or vice versa. On any given day, there is something that I feel strongly called to paint, and to do anything else would be horrible for me. To paint something different wouldn't work for me. And so it's mysterious to me that I will often think the night before, particularly if I'm in between paintings, I'll often think the night before, all right, I'm going to do another one of this. And then I get up and I come in the morning and I find myself wanting to do something totally different. And I can't get around that. I have to do that.
Do you relate any of this process to the oft-said phrase, every painting is a self-portrait? Are you connected with that? You ever heard that?
I have heard that. I kind of understand that, but and I suppose that's true of any kind of work that involves any level of creativity and self-expression. But I don't think of them as self-portraits. I think of them as portraits of trees, mm-hmm. and I paint portraits of people from time to time in exactly the same way. And it's just much slower because faces are much less forgiving than tree trunks, yeah. in terms of taking liberties. but if you look at a painting, I did a painting of a very dear friend who's approaching 90 years old, just a few weeks ago, as a present for her granddaughter for her wedding, and if you look at that painting up close, it looks exactly like, I mean, it's painted exactly the same way uh-huh. I paint this, but it's so much slower because I have to pay. Because you have to get everything right.
Did you paint by looking at her, or were you painting from memory?
I painted from a snapshot.
Snapshot, yeah.
On portraits, I usually paint a portrait from a very specific image.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost always painting portraits of people is something I've done from time to time, not very often. When my son was an adolescent, and I went to my studio one day and I did a big 30 by 42 inch oil pastel portrait of his face. And I did it from a snapshot. It was the first real portrait I'd ever done. And so then I decided I'd do one of my late wife. And then I decided I'd do one of my niece who was living with us. And then I decided I'd do one of Gene Flanagan Carlo, and one of Alvin, and one of Aldona, and you know, and pretty soon, I mean, this is the way it always works for me. Is I almost never set out to do a series. I'll do something, and then in the course of doing it, I'll think, well, I can also do it this way, and so then I'm excited, and as soon as I'm done with that one, I do another one with some variation on it. And then another one, and another one. And I look up 6 months later, and I look around the studio, and I've got, oh my gosh, I got a whole studio full of portraits. Or I have a whole studio full of falling snow. Because each time I do one, I think of other ways that I could do falling snow. You know, so I end up working in series, but I almost never set out to do a series. And whatever painting I'm working, I only work on ever one painting at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Part of that is insecurity. I never know whether it's going to work out, and so I'm always anxious until it's nearly done about whether it's going to work out. But when I'm working on that painting, I'm so completely focused on that painting. And my mood and everything else is heavily impacted by how it's going. I mean, Dorley can tell within moments of my coming in the house at the end of the day how my painting's going. She doesn't even have to ask. And I'm completely wrapped up in the painting that I'm doing. And then as soon as it's done, people often ask me, do I ever have a hard time giving up images? And I don't have any trouble.
What does that mean, giving up an image?
I mean, it just having a painting go away.
Oh, go
do
away.
Do I ever get attached
oh, okay.
to painting
yeah.
and not want them to go away? And no, as soon as it's done, I don't have any more interest in it.
That was going to be my next question.
I put it on the wall and hopefully somebody else will be interested
yeah.
in it. But then I'm totally focused on the next uh-huh. painting.
Yeah.
I've never understood. I've known a lot of artists who say, oh, it's so hard for me to give up any of my work. I'm happy for my work to go out into the world. I love seeing my paintings on other people's walls and on museum walls and in businesses and airport ceilings and, you know, wherever. But I don't get attached to them as objects for myself.
Do you think about the idea of communication? If you communicate something through a painting, but then there has to be somebody else who's going to receive the communication of some sort from the painting?
I do.
Okay.
I do. But I don't kid myself that that what I want to communicate is what I do communicate.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that I talk about a lot when I talk about other artists' work, is that people are so focused on, you know, what are you trying to say in your work? And you know, what is your work about?
How do you answer that?
And I say it's about painting. It's about painting and living in the boreal forest. But there are a lot of things that I think about the forest and that I think about trees. And I gather from what people say to me in response to my work that some of that comes through. But I think lots of other things come through as well. And I think in the end, it makes almost no difference what the artist intended. All that matters is what the artist did. And much of the communication in every painting, I mean, this is when I taught art history, and when I give talks in museums and elsewhere these days, I'm always saying, you know, when you look at a painting, don't ask yourself, what is it a painting of, but ask yourself, what does the painting say? There's no such thing as a neutral image. All images have meaning. And much of that meaning is completely unconscious on the part of the artist. And every landscape painting is about relationship of people to the land, people to place. And what you choose to paint and the way you choose to paint it says volumes about how you feel about your relationship to that place, but only a little bit of that is conscious. There's a lot, much of what we all do as artists, of what we all communicate as artists, is, I think, very different from what we intend to say.
Well, Cass, we've been talking about an hour now. I think it's time for us to draw this to a close.
Okay.
I feel personally enriched
by
being involved in this conversation.
Thank you for your good questions.
Okay, so I want to thank Cass for such a delightful conversation. And we're going to shut our recording down now. I think that's all I need to do. Okay. It's the hard part. Power off. Not still staying on.
Okay, hopefully it's there.
Well, it says recording. Let's